The sage had a son who was very powerful, being a brahmana's son. While he was playing with inexperienced boys, he heard of his father's distress, which was occasioned by the king. Then and there, the boy spoke as follows. Purport. Due to Maharaj Parikshit's good government, even a boy of tender age who was playing with other inexperienced boys could become as powerful as a qualified brahmana. This boy was known as Sringi, and he achieved good training in brahmacharya by his father, so that he could be as powerful as a brahmana even at that age. But because the age of Kali was seeking an opportunity to spoil the cultural heritage of the four orders of life, the inexperienced boy gave a chance for the age of Kali to enter into the field of Vedic culture. Hatred of the lower orders of life began from this brahmana boy under the influence of Kali, and thus cultural life began to dwindle day after day. The first victim of brahminical injustice was Maharaj Parikshit, and thus the protection given by the king against the onslaught of Kali was slackened. Om Ajnanatimirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yataf Parakamalam Shri Gurunda Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Taitam Nadevam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. It seems unlikely that a boy who's boyish, childish, playing with other boys could be powerful enough to curse someone to death, and that curse would be potent, especially that he could curse someone else who is very powerful. Parikshit Maharaj is very powerful also. But actually it happened. And Srila Prabhupada comments here that the reason that this Sringi, the brahmana's son, was so powerful was due to the good government of Maharaj Parikshit, which the function of good government is palan and poshan, to maintain and protect and to nourish the good qualities of others. So certainly Maharaj Parikshit was interested in maintaining and nourishing the brahminical culture. Brahminical culture means not simply that which the Brahmins follow, but the culture that is headed by the Brahmins. Means within brahminical culture there are also kshatriyas, vaishyas and shudras, but they may in a broader sense be considered within the brahminical culture because they're in the culture that is guided by brahmanas, and whatever culture they have is modeled on the usages of the brahmanas, who follow more of the usages which are the behavioral attributes that are purifying in every sense, physical purity, mental purity, and ultimately spiritual purity. So Maharaj Parikshit wanted to foster this. This is his duty as a king. There was no, in the modern age, we have so many political problems and political systems because they don't know what the function of government is. They don't know what the purpose of life is, so therefore they cannot know what the purpose of anything is. People are very interested in the Western world, it's almost like a fanaticism that people are so interested in their health. They have so many varieties of health food and exercises and alternative healing. But why should they be healthy? Jivasya tattva jignyasa. This they don't know, that life is meant for living for the person of for the purpose of inquiring into tattva, that which is. Tattva, the tat means that which qualifies. What are the different? What is reality? How is one thing distinguished from another? Vishnu tattva, that means that which is in the category of Vishnu, he who is in the different forms of Vishnu. Only Vishnu forms, they are Vishnu tattva. Others may be Shakti tattva or Jiva tattva. So all these, what are the characteristics that allow a person to be known as Vishnu? So all these points should be understood. If it's not understood, then obviously there will be misunderstanding. Jivasya tatvajignasa. So this is the purpose of life, to understand all the different tattvas. What is reality? What is the thatness? What is it that is the essence of reality? So this is for persons who are on the mundane platform, or for anyone, it's highly abstruse subject matter. So that is specially to be inquired into by the brahmanas, the persons who are on the gross material platform. They cannot acquire tattva gyan. They cannot understand what are the subtleties of reality, and they presume that everything that we can touch, taste, smell, feel, and hear, and whatever information we can acquire in this way, and further extrapolate through our mental functions, this we can accept as reality. Which they think it's a very good proposition, not considering that their sensory perception and their abilities to speculate on what they perceive is highly limited. So a brahmana means one of udaradhi, broader intelligence. Broader intelligence who goes very deeply into the subject matter of reality, and not on his own speculation, but in a guided process through studying Shastra. So one who studies Shastra, to study Shastra, first of all, one has to have the qualification. We see in Shastra itself that what are the qualities required of one who is to study Shastra. So one should be a brahmana, especially for studying Brahma Gyan. That can also be studied by Kshatriyas and to some extent Vaishyas. They also may study Shastra to some extent. But for investigating this, the subtleties, the depth of Brahma Gyan, that which is spiritual, that which is not perceivable by the mundane senses, that requires, because Brahma, the absolute truth, is the most pure, that requires a mode of living that is suitable for entering into that pure subject matter. Not a very gross way of life, withdrawn from sense gratification, so that withdrawn from gross sense gratification, so that the gross impact on the senses is minimized, and one can turn one's attention to the subtle reality. By subtle, that means that which is reality, but which is not manifest to the gross senses, which is not actual reality at all, the gross method of perception. Gross method of perception means we see anything. We see everything, we taste, we smell, we feel, and we consider it in terms of how it is appealing to my sense gratification. I like this, therefore I accept it. I don't like this, therefore I reject it. We see everything in terms of the paradigm Ishvarahamaham Bhogi. I am the controller and everything is meant for my enjoyment. So this is the outlook of every conditioned soul, which doesn't change when one comes to the human form of life, the same as animal consciousness, only the sense perception even may not be as strong as in lesser forms of life, but the ability to manipulate the material objects for sense gratification. So it's building buildings. Birds can build nests, which humans can't do. But such big buildings as this, humans can do this. They can manipulate the material energy for their sense gratification, and they can speculate in more abstruse ways than the animals can. They also have some intelligence. The animals can be trained to perform functions that require more than some animals can be trained to perform functions that require more than simple lunging at the sense objects and enjoying them. For instance, certain dogs can be, collie dogs can be trained how to round up sheep. That's something, isn't it? Humans are not so good at that. Or these Labradors, they can be trained as guide dogs for blind people. So they can perform some function, they can be trained to perform some function more than that which is simply getting some meat and eating it. But the human has the ability to speculate in various ways on all kinds of subject matters. But that speculation, if it's going to come to its proper goal, must be guided. That must be in contact with the Absolute Truth, which is the actual object of all investigation. So brahmanas, they are to be, the king knows that the brahmanas are to be maintained in human society. They have such an important role to play because they give meaning to the whole of society. Otherwise there's no meaning. Otherwise it's simply ahara nidra bhaya maithun, eating, sleeping, mating and defending. Which brahmanas, they may also give direction on. They're also maybe engaged in these activities. But they give direction on eating, sleeping, mating and defending, how we can eat, sleep, mate and defend in such a way that we can transcend the bodily demands of eating, sleeping, mating and defending. So the brahmanas are to be maintained, their influence simply by the presence of a brahmana. Here it's mentioned how Sringi was so powerful. It's simply by their influence, even on the material platform, they can bring good fortune to others, which is why even today in India and in other countries of the world also, we find that among pious people, sadhus, or as they may be differently known in other parts of the world, priests in Christian countries. They are pious people, like to come to sadhus because they have the feeling that sadhus or priests or such persons, they can bless us for our material well-being. In Ireland, for instance, which used to be a staunchly Catholic country, it was a common thing that the people would go and they'd ask the priest, say a prayer for me, which is like in India, people coming to the sadhu and asking for ashirvad, say a prayer for me. So the feeling that if the priest says a prayer for me, I can also pray for myself, but if the priest says a prayer for me, then that will be better because he has some power. Of course, they don't know that because the priests are eating meat and drinking wine and smoking and watching TV, they don't actually have much power. But there's a feeling that they should have some power because they're religious people. So Brahmanas, here we see, they actually had power. And there are so many instances we find in Shastra. Rishyashringa, simply by his unknown brahmacharya, he didn't even know he was a brahmacharya. His father protected him in such a way that he had no knowledge of anything but his ashram, in which something like Lord Shiva, that there was a, it was only brahmacharis, something like the ashrams here, only brahmacharis can come. So, in the adjoining kingdom, what was the name of the king? Anyone remember? Vidvan? Did I see him? He went off to be Vidvan somewhere else. No, I don't remember either. Maharaj Romapad. There was no rain in the kingdom due to some fault of the king. If there's no rain, it's considered there's some fault of the king. If there's too much rain, it's considered the fault of the king. Even if the rain falls in the day instead of the night, it's considered the king's not pious enough. It should fall at night only, when everyone's sleeping, and it's very convenient. So that the kings had to be that much powerful. So there was no rain for many years, and Rompad Maharaj was feeling that he was some fault of mine. He asked his court brahmanas, who were powerful enough by astrological investigation, to say that if you bring Rishyashringa from the nearby forest, then just by his coming the rain will come, which happened actually. He was tricked into coming. He came, and as soon as he arrived in the kingdom, the rain started falling. So he had that power. He was also young, youth at that time. So there's so many instances. We find the demigods approaching Dadhichi in Bhagavatam, that we have a request of you. Yes, what is that? Please give us your bones. Kindly die for us so that we can use your bones to make a thunderbolt which will kill Vritrasura. Okay. He was ready. Because he had, there was power in his very body. There was brahminical power, Brahma Teja, this whole point. And I was saying in a previous class, how Vishvamitra, he wasn't satisfied with his power as a king, but he wanted to have the power of a brahmana. Brahmanas become very powerful by their austerities, by recitation of Vedic mantras, by their meditation on the absolute truth, whether understood as Brahman, Paramatma, or Bhagavan. So by all these activities, they become very powerful. However, we see that Sringi, he hadn't done much of this because he was only a young boy, and he wasn't a fully absorbed brahmana, because as a young boy, he was playing with other young boys. So how did he get so much power? It's stated here due to Maharaj Parikshit's good government. That's one reason. In anything that we see, there's more than one cause. There are various causes. There's at least the Naimittik karan and upadan karan. In Sankhya philosophy, it's analyzed. There's the ultimate cause and the immediate cause. The example is given of a pot, clay pot. The cause is the clay. It's comes from clay, but the instrumental cause, or the naimittik karan, or the is the potter, because the clay doesn't make itself into a pot. And then we could say there are so many other causes also. Then why did the potter make it? Because he has a family to support and he has to sell the pot. So someone specifically asked him to make this kind of pot. So there may be so many causes behind any manifestation or any activity. Here it's stated that the Sringi, even though he was a young boy, he was able to be so powerful due to Maharaj Parikshit's good government. So that was one reason. The good government fostered Brahminical culture. But Prabhupada goes on in the purport to explain how his good training in Brahmacharya by his father, so that he could be as powerful as a Brahmana even at that age. So training in Brahmacharya means not simply in celibacy, but Brahmacharityati Brahmacharya, training in Vedic knowledge, in the mantras of the Vedas, by which one gets power. Even today, sometimes, especially in South India now, if we go, we'll sometimes see groups of Brahmanas sitting in a temple, and they'll be chanting together, maybe Vishnu Sahasranam, or whatever it may be. So just coming into that association, even though they may be chanting in the evening and in the daytime, they're all at work in their offices, and they come home and drink some coffee, and then they go to the temple and chant Vishnu Sahasranam. But there, even then, we can feel the purificatory effect of persons chanting with faith the Vedic mantras. It's the name of Vishnu is the most powerful of all mantras. All the Vedic mantras are very powerful. So Sringi, he was, even though he didn't really know what he was doing, he was studying. He'd been trained in the mantras, but it seems that at this boyish age, due to his boyish proclivities, he hadn't understood why he was doing what he was doing. He was still interested in playing around. It may be that, could be said that that's normal for boys, although we see there are instances of some children who from very young age, they show no interest in any. Prahlad is a famous example. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, no interest in. He was never a boy. Sometimes they say that, well, you have to let the children play and run around and have fun and do what they like. But we find the really great personality. Well, why you should let them play and let them enjoy their childhood. This is based on the saying this is based on the misconception that childhood is something enjoyable, that there is anything of any enjoyment in this material world. Those who have highly advanced personalities, then even at a young age, they're more like adults. We'll find also, it's described in the Bible, that in the New Testament, that Lord Jesus, as a boy, he debated with the priests in the temple. And they were surprised at his knowledge. He was so powerful at a young age. So great personalities, they don't have a boyhood as such, even though the body may be physically growing up. But from the very beginning of life, Kaumara Acharat Pragyo Dharman Bhagavataniha. From the very beginning of life, they're very serious about the, because they're pragya, they're aware of what is the actual purpose of life. They're highly intelligent. Therefore, they don't waste time playing around as a child, but they immediately, from the beginning of life, they take interest in what is the actual purpose of life. So, whereas most people never actually grow up, they remain childish throughout their life. Childishness that is exhibited by an excess of egoism. If you don't immediately get what you want, you start crying and making a big noise, demanding that what I require should be provided. So as one grows older, one comes to understand that you can't always get what you want, and it's not socially acceptable to do so. But still that feeling is there, that the world should be organized in such a way that I get that everything that I want. So this childish attitude continues throughout life, whereas those who are actually inquisitive, tasaiva heto prayateta kovido, those who are actually learned about the actual principles of life, then they don't waste time playing. They use all their time for inquiry into the Absolute Truth, as Prabhupada comments in the purport of this. Kamasya nindriya priti jivasya tatvajignyasa. The senses are not meant for sense enjoyment. Life is meant for inquiry into the Absolute Truth. Prabhupada comments that persons who are devotees of the Lord, or persons who are serious about the purpose of life, they don't engage in sense gratification. They don't have time. They're busy all the time in inquiring about the Absolute Truth. So where is the question of sense gratification? They don't have time, because they realize that all the time is so important. Every moment should be utilized for inquiry into the Absolute Truth. So Sringi, it's stated here, he could become as powerful as a qualified Brahmin. He wasn't a qualified Brahmin. He was qualified in some ways. He was qualified with the power of certain mantras, but he wasn't qualified in the sense that he was tatvijignyasa. He wasn't qualified with the wisdom and maturity that comes of one who is interested in inquiring into the Absolute Truth. So, therefore, another example of that, Ashvatthama was empowered with the knowledge of how to throw the Brahmastra weapon, not full knowledge, not how to withdraw it, only how to throw it. But even though he was a Brahmana by birth, he was actually more like a Rakshasa by vritti, by outlook, by qualification. So he misused that knowledge. So this training in Vedic knowledge, that should be given to persons who are training of this higher level of Vedic knowledge. That should be given to persons who are tattva-jignyasu, who are eager to understand the tattva or the principles underlying the knowledge. Otherwise, this knowledge is very powerful, and if misused, it can cause disaster, as is seen. There are so many Karnad, Gotam, and so many Ashtavakra, Dattatreya, so many philosophers who are knowledgeable of Vedic knowledge, but their conclusion is wrong and creates disaster in society. The most famous name in Indian culture, probably even today, is that of Shankaracharya, who made a disaster by misteaching the Vedas. Calculated disaster. So, first of all, it should be seen, is a person qualified to receive this knowledge? Now, devotees are assembling for this bhakti shastri course, and it's being taught traditionally. It has to be seen, how is one fit to be taught? Of course, presumably you're all initiated devotees, which means that initiation means that one is accepted as fit to be taught the Vedic knowledge. But as Prabhupada repeatedly said, the purpose of education is not to become highly learned. That is there, of course. Otherwise, what is education? But character training, that is the basis. Otherwise, to teach a person who is not of good character, that is very dangerous. As we see here, Sringi, he's got knowledge, but no character. His father, in good faith, no doubt, imparted this knowledge to him, expecting him to be of the same caliber of himself and Shamika Rishi, his father, the proud parampara, seminal parampara, of proud and not in the sense of puffed up, but persons who one can respect, just like we're proud of our acharyas, we're proud that we are members of the Gauriya Vaishnava Sampradaya. We can look back and see, these are our acharyas, these are great personalities. So we can be proud that we've been accepted in the shelter of the dust of their lotus feet. So Sringi, he wasn't trained in proper character, and it wasn't expected that he would misuse this. It wasn't expected that the king would suddenly walk into Shamika Rishi's ashram, or even if he did, it wasn't expected that this power would be so much misused. Therefore, it's described that it was all arranged by the Lord. But that general direction is there. One should not be taught the Vedic knowledge unless one is qualified. Qualification begins with surrender. Vidyadadati vinayam. Knowledge gives humility, but the actual knowledge means one should become humble. But in the beginning there has to be humility. Otherwise, if one is given Vedic knowledge but one is not humble, it will be most detrimental both for the person receiving the knowledge and for those who he later comes in contact with. It'll be detrimental for him, because instead of nourishing that initial humility with which he's supposed to approach Guru, it will instead nourish the pride and ambition with which he has approached the Guru. So simply his pride will increase on getting some knowledge. Even though, what can we know? How much can we know? Even if one has as much knowledge as Lord Brahma, still, knowledge is unlimited. And even Brahma, for all his knowledge, he couldn't understand he was Krishna. So knowledge in and of itself, amassing information, or even having philosophical ability to analyze that information in various ways, this is called panditya, or intellectualism. But those who are actually knowledgeable, and they become humble, understanding how all this knowledge just points to the fact that how incredibly small we are, how insignificant we are, and whatever knowledge we have, how much can we have? Nowadays, if we see someone who's learned, so who has some knowledge of Shaivism, we think, oh, very learned, very intelligent. But the Brahminical culture, whatever, this is 5,000 years ago we're talking about, but even 50 years ago, the Brahminical culture that was in India, that's gone. That's it's gone. Or 100 years ago, that in every village there would be people who are so learned in Shastra that the people we call pandits nowadays, they might qualify as disciples of just any ordinary pandit 100 years ago. So people, there are still names in India: Dvivedi, Trivedi, Chaturvedi. The people, those who know two Vedas or three Vedas or four Vedas, just the name. You will find hardly any of them know any Veda. It's rare to find anyone who can recite even one Veda, or what's left of any Veda. What to speak of knowing all the different philosophical systems, so many things. And nowadays, if someone knows 50 shlokas or something, they think, oh, very learned. So, vidyadadati vinayam, one should become humble. And that humility, that is increased as one goes on learning. Generally, with materialistic knowledge, as one goes on learning, he becomes more and more puffed up. But with spiritual knowledge, if one's actually receiving spiritual knowledge, then should become more humble and should be of good character. That means you don't curse someone unless just on a whim. That's one feature of good character. Of course, there's a lot more to it than that. But the good character that Chanakya Pandit has summed up, that he, Prabhupada, used to quote so many times, that how does that begin? Paradareshu, Matrivat Paradareshu, Lostravat Paradravyeshu. How does that go? Is that Lostravat Paradravyeshu, is it? Then Atmavat Sarvabhutam Anam Yapashyati Sapandita. The first thing one should see, every woman accept one's own wife as one mother, as one's mother. Any property begotten Paradravyeshu Loshravat, any property of others, one should consider it, not consider it, just as one might consider a stone or something like this. It's just, it's not anything for me to take any interest in. It's not to covet it. And to see one's own situation in relation to that of others. That not considering just what is good for me, but one should consider all others, how one can act always for the benefit of others, not simply for my own benefit. One should think of others, one should consider them as, one should consider others' interest as much as that of oneself. Who sees like this is a learned person. And actually, those who are great personalities, even more, they sacrifice their own interest for the sake of others. So this outlook, this is actual all learning is simply to inculcate this kind of outlook, or this outlook, without which, if one becomes learned and then advertises himself as a great scholar, then others, they may be fooled by, or they may be attracted by that, they may give respect, and one then is then able to mislead others. Or even if one speaks the right philosophy, which, but if one does so with the attitude of wanting to show off one's knowledge or be respected by others, then that also will not help. Knowledge, if it's imparted in such a manner, will not help others or oneself. And one with such an attitude, for all his learning, for all his education, for all his hearing from a bona fide spiritual master, is certain to introduce some misconceptions. He'll put some spin on the philosophy so that it'll come out somewhat differently. Because knowledge means ultimately to learn, I am the servant of Krishna, and I have no other function but to serve Krishna. But the other side of service is exploitation. So unless one is repeating this knowledge or utilizing this knowledge in the service of Krishna, unless one's motive is only to serve, then the exploiting tendency must come. And that will come in the form of cheating others. So a teacher or a guru, if he has any other motive in accepting disciples or students than to serve them, then he must cheat them. Not so. So even though the guru accepts service from disciples, his only motive should be to train them how to better serve Krishna and to take their service and offer that to Krishna. So Sringi was qualified and unqualified. Qualified means he had some power. Yeah, to take birth in a Brahminical family, he must have had some sukriti or pious result from a previous life. But if that is mixed, pious activities, it doesn't always mean pious conscience. In this material world, the pious tendency is always mixed with the exploitive tendency. Pure piety means to surrender to Krishna. Mostly what we call piety, it means someone performs some Vedic or scripturally ordained activities with the idea of enjoying sense gratification better in future. So the exploitive tendency is there. So sometimes even the demons, they perform pious activities. Indrajit, the son of Ravana, was famous as a powerful brahmana. He would perform sacrifices. But his motive in doing so, he had acquired the knowledge of how to perform sacrifices for the sake of causing destruction to others. So it's a very bad combination. And sometimes that's found, that people who have, they have some pious activities, but their tendency to exploit others and to grossly enjoy this material world, that becomes very prominent also. And therefore we have the asuras, who are very powerful, and they have facilities for sense enjoyment, but they're demons. They may also follow the Vedic injunctions to some extent, but the essence of the Vedic injunctions, which is service to Vishnu, they're against that principle. So the demons, they may achieve much opulence and sense gratification as a result of their previous and even ongoing pious activities. But because of their grossly exploitive nature, they must engage ultimately in very sinful activities, which will then wipe out their all their sukriti. So it's a fine balance. This especially the brahmanas in Kali Yuga, Rakshasim, Kalimashricha, Jayante, Brahma Yonishu. There are so many, not all, but many of the persons born in Brahminical families in Kali Yuga were Rakshasas in a previous birth, who demoniac persons who were not fortunate enough to be killed by Krishna or his representatives, especially Arjuna and Bhima. So they took many of those who they weren't cleared off the face of the earth. They took birth in Brahminical families in Kali Yuga and wreaked havoc, beginning with Sringi. That means another reason why Sringi may have had so much power may be from previous life. We see even in the modern age, some people have some power. We don't know where they got it from, some yogic power. We don't see that in this life they performed any austerities. Or even pious activities, but still they're very powerful. There are some yogis or some persons who are highly worshipped by others, some sadhus, who they have some power from previous life, because we don't see anything in this life. Even I had an experience, there may be like somewhat ordinary people. I had an experience once in a holy place. I was just walking down the path and the door of one's man's home was open and he beckoned me to come in and I went in. And he was sitting there smoking and he just said to me that, now you're having so many problems from headaches. At that time I was having many headaches. But he said, that will clear away. And in course of time, you'll be able to fulfill your desires for writing. because I had desire to write many books, but I wasn't able to because I was having so much headache. So I'd never seen the man before, and I don't think he'd ever seen me before. But then he was an astrologer, and a smoker also. But he had some shakti, that he was just by seeing me, just walking past, he could say all these things to me. There are people in Bombay. There's someone who's famous. People go to him, and I didn't go, but devotees told me, just go, and he tells you. He said, this is going on in your life, and you do this, 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 and this, and it'll be okay. So, just like that. No Bhrigu Samhita, nothing. Just seize them like this. So, some mystic, what we call mystic power. Mystic power means we don't understand how it works. But some power is awarded to persons by following the Vedic principles. Maharaj Parikshit's power was much more than that of Sringi. Not his Kshatriya power, but his power as a devotee. He could have cancelled out Sringi's curse, but he showed himself to be great, far greater than Sringi, by simply accepting his curse. Curse means you pronounce something that will be undesirable for others. But Maharaj Parikshit, because he was so much greater than Sringi, simply accepted. Oh, all right. And in this way, by his accepting the curse without being disturbed, just by that, he showed that he was on a far higher, without even wanting to show, without wanting to outdo Sringi, he outdid him by simply accepting the curse. He could have responded. Ambarish Maharaj, he could have responded to Durvasa Muni, but just on so much more exalted a level than the proud Brahmin boy could imagine. I'm so advanced, I'm so powerful, let me show my power. And Parikshit Maharaj showed his power, or not his, not exhibition of power, but his greatness by simply accepting, by taking shelter of Krishna. So this class is supposed to end at 8 o'clock, and it's now 7:54. So if there are any questions or comments, you can take them now. Yeah, please. Sorry? Ushered in the hatred of lower classes, yeah.
And I'd like to know if there's a connection between the shift that comes when there's hatred of lower classes. For example, the focus would be on the occupation rather than on the qualities of those who belong to the population system. And if that shift in focus.
If the shift from. Seeing the qualities of lower classes rather than hating them.
But for example, the Brahmins, the focus would be on their occupation rather than on their qualities, or on their birth rather than on the qualities.
No, first the guna is seen, then the karma comes. So
in that hatred of lower classes,
then it only becomes by janma later on, without seeing guna. Then it becomes janma karma. One takes occupation according to his birth only, without seeing the quality. Yeah, so?
So my question is that focus on the occupation rather than on the quality, if there's a link there between private society, privatization of society, if we're seeing the occupation...
Privatization of society? Not very. It's a long ongoing process. But generally it came to be understood, or it was understood previously, or it was generally accepted that a person born in a Brahmin family is to be a Brahmana. Generally that would be, and the quality training would be there also. And others could also, could acquire to that status, but not generally. Generally it was by birth, that we see throughout the Vedic literature. One is born in a Brahmin family due to some past pious activity. Shuchinang Srimatam Gehe Yoga Brashto Vijayate. So, in Kali Yuga that became just the consider only by birth and no need of the quality. It became, because of the exploitive mood of Kali Yuga, that the Brahman simply saw what facilities we can get, how we can facilitate our sense gratification through the prestige that we acquire from our position, and therefore the lower classes, they should be kept in that position. A person of qualities likes to see how others can develop their qualities also. But a person of limited quality likes to make sure that others can't come up. That's asuric mentality. So I'm not sure what the question was exactly. It sounds like a complex sociological question. It is all these things are generalizations also, because even today you'll find persons of actual Brahminical disposition in Brahmin families. They've kept the Brahminical culture going on. And such persons will tend to respect or accept persons who have actually maintained that Brahminical culture in their families, they will tend to accept persons who are not of Brahminical families, but who are of Brahminical qualities. They will be more open to accept that, especially if they're from Vaishnava background. If we ourselves are not trained in good character, how can we train our children in good character? The answer is, anyone know the answer? You can't. So we have to get trained. It may take some time. Srila Prabhupada intimated that it would take some time. He didn't expect it all to happen in one generation. From what we've heard, Prabhupada expected it to happen in three generations. So we're on the second generation now, but is the second generation more like Parikshit Maharaj or more like Sringi? Or not like either of them, actually. Education and training. So now this Bhakti Shastri course, there's some move towards education. But training in Brahminical culture has to be there also. Otherwise, if we acquire this knowledge, but we're not trained in the culture, that knowledge is meant to be acquired within, the knowledge and the culture go together, then we'll find dichotomy. We won't actually be able to fully grasp that knowledge. And then if we remain within the cultural mold that we were raised in, then we'll always want to try to fit the Vedic culture together with that Asuric mold that we were brought up in, which we tend to think is superior, and try to put the two together, but that it's like trying to mix oil and water. It doesn't, you can kind of mix it together for some time, but it doesn't properly mix. So the first thing, why the mother is called the first guru, why? The mother doesn't teach the Vedas, but she teaches the beginnings of how to live as a human being. Mother and father, they teach these things. When these things are inculcated, then the child is sent to Gurukul for learning Vedic knowledge. First of all, one has to learn how to behave as a human being to some extent. And then that, so that one is fit to be sent to Guru. We should work on this, become trained. There's highly controversial points within our society at the present time, but according to my perception, which it may be seen as just my perception, we seem to be more going back to the Western way of thinking and acting and even teaching. It's not actually to study Shastra, it's not just what you're taught, but how you're taught is also essential. Anyway, I guess that saved me from the controversies. Time to take darshan, to be seen, to present ourselves to be seen by Radha Madhava. Hare Krishna.